Welcome to the African Passport on Channel Africa, the African perspective. You can find us on DSTV Audio Bouquet, Channel 802, and also on the internet live streaming on www.channelafrica.co.za. Let us connect on Facebook at Channel Africa and on Twitter at Channel Africa 1 or at The African Pass. You can also find episodes of the show on www.theafricanpassportshow.com. I'm Godfrey, Mr. G. Madanere. You can also download the Channel Africa app on Google Play Store for Android phones and via Apple Store for iOS phones. The African Passport Show is a program that seeks to publicize the vision and aspirations of Agenda 2063 as outlined by the African Union. Here, we visualize the Africa we want. Godfrey, Mr. G, on Channel Africa, the African perspective.
The African Passport knows no boundaries in our quest to build peace, transform societies, promote tolerance, and ensure prosperity. On this episode, we travel across the world and pick the brains of academics and intellectuals who have been accepted to study an international course on peace and transformation, peace building organized by Universitas Muhammadiyah Yogyakarta, Indonesia. I am in conversation with Professor Vijay Kumar from India, Mushtaq Al-Haq Ahmad Sikandar from India, and Emmanuel Shaw from Nigeria. Welcome to the show. I'll start off with you, Professor Vijay Kumar. What is your area of specialization?
First of all, I would like to thank you, Mr. Godfrey, for inviting me to this prestigious show. I'm a teacher educator in India, and we teach future school teachers who will be preparing, who will be developing the future of the country, of the nation, and also of the world. So I'm a professor in education, basically, teacher education, you can say. And our work involves teaching future teachers how to teach, how we should use teaching methods, how to evaluate our students, how to inculcate various important values, skills, and aptitude in them. So I'm a teacher educator, basically. Yeah.
Thank you very much for investing in education. I know the education system in India is very powerful. That's why we have seen a lot of people from African countries moving to India to further their studies. What lessons do you think African countries can learn from the education system in India?
Ms. Godfrey, as you know, India is a software power. You can see many people from India who have been educated in Indian universities, colleges, IITs, IIMs. They are leading the top multinational software powerhouse, like you can see Google is there, you can see Microsoft is there. Most of these companies are being led by Indian professionals. So we are a superpower in software engineering, and definitely this is what I think is required by African countries also. So we can learn from these things. We can help African countries through our software knowledge. We can also, because African countries are also very important, they can teach so many values to the whole world also. So, but I think software is one thing which we can teach to the African countries, students from Africa. Yeah, definitely many students, around 25,000, 30,000 students every year, they take admission in Indian universities. And we have a world's biggest education system. More than 30 crore students are studying in our schools and colleges and universities. So it is the biggest education system in the whole world. Yeah.
The African Passport is a stage where we showcase African talent and influencers with the capacity to help build a prosperous continent and an equal global partner. We profile sons and daughters of Africa, both living on the continent and the diaspora. Their inspiring life stories, emotional opinions, and pan-African views positively contribute towards shaping the Africa we want for our children and future generations.
And how can we use education to help promote peace throughout the world?
Sir, I would quote Mahatma Gandhiji's in this. As you know, he had his earlier career experiences in South Africa. But I would say that he got lessons of peace in South Africa when he was practicing there. So education and peace are intimately related. If we can provide good quality education, then good quality education would definitely promote peace. So why I'm saying so? Because the purpose of education is to promote values. Value-based education is very, very important. So if we can teach students values, I have been a student of Jamia Millia Islamia. So our professors, they used to say, you cannot teach values. You cannot teach values to the students. They have to catch the values in the process. So if we are not, for example, setting examples for our students, we are saying that you should do this, you should do this, and we ourselves are not doing, then it will not help students. Okay, so we need to set examples. So setting examples is taught in education. So this is important. Value-based education would definitely promote peace. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Professor Vijay Kumar. I'll get back to you. I still have a lot that I need to unpack with you. Let me move on for now to Emmanuel Shaw. Emmanuel Shaw, you are in Nigeria, and I know you studied a master's degree in disaster risk management.
Yes.
What is your primary responsibility as a senior programs officer at Mercy Corps?
Okay, thank you very much for having me on the show, first of all. Really glad to be here. So my role, specifically in Mercy Corps as the senior programs officer, is on USAID-funded project known as Community Initiative to Promote Peace. And what I'm responsible for is to ensure the programmatic success of this project in the states where we work in Nigeria. You would know that Nigeria in recent times have been ravaged with issues of insecurity and conflict. And so the USAID is funding a program here for about $15 million in six states in Nigeria. And my job specifically is to ensure the smooth running of this program in all the states where we work, focusing on project management, partnership management, technical support for our team members, grant management for our sub-grantees, doing stuff like context monitoring to ensure that we are being conflict sensitive in our program implementation. You know, that's just a general overview. And of course, there are many others, but for time's sake, I'll stop here.
Godfrey, Mr. G on Channel Africa. The African perspective. Oh, thank you very much for that overview. We got an idea of the good work that you're doing at Mercy Corps.
Thank you.
Why should Africa invest in conflict sensitivity and disaster risk management?
All right, thank you. That's a very beautiful question. I'd like to give a background to this, and I'll start from the angle of the disaster risk management, or reduction, as we like to call it. You know, Africa developed an African strategy for disaster risk reduction. And it's funny because this is not very much known. And it was a document that was developed by the AU with support from the United Nations Office for Disaster Risk Reduction and United Nations Development Program. Now, this was an offshoot from the Hyogo framework for disaster risk reduction that last spanned from 2005 to 2015. And so when the Hyogo framework was at the brink of expiring in 2015, the AU, you know, rallied to bring the countries that are under the umbrella of the AU to develop what they call a program of action. And now this program of action for disaster risk reduction, which is also known as the Sendai framework, is supposed to last from 2015 to 2030. Talking about this investment, if Africa is already doing this, it tells us something, that investment in disaster risk reduction is very key. And I would like to point something that happened in the continent generally in 2017. This is a time that Africa will not forget. Because firstly, we look at a country like Sierra Leone, who lost lives and assets, you know, to the deadliest mudslide ever in 2017. You would also recall, if you're aware, of the incidents in Congo where, you know, a fishing village vanished. And then over 200 school children, you know, who survived the mudslide disaster, you know, had to be catered for and all of that. It's a very important component for investment in Africa to really look at this component of disaster risk reduction. Also, there is this study that was done by a program under the EU, which was titled Building Disaster Resilience to Natural Hazard in Sub-Saharan African Region. This study looks at three countries, particularly Angola, Tanzania, and if I recall correctly, United Republic of Tanzania, yeah, and Zambia, yes. Now, this study showed that the average estimated annual cost of flooding in these three countries that we have mentioned is estimated to be about $7 million annually. That is what is being lost to flooding in these three countries. And I'd like to bring it home. In Nigeria, for example, year on year, we have flooding issues around states in Nigeria that are close to the riverside. And if we're talking about disaster is something that if you do not prepare for it and it comes upon you, it can be very deadly. So there is no overemphasizing the need for Africa to really work with that document that the EU has developed and see how they can institutionalize it in each of the EU countries and begin to invest in this more intentionally, because you cannot separate disaster and the climate change issues we're talking about. The climate is changing, no doubt. The amount of desert encroachment we're experiencing in Nigeria from the northeast angle and from the northwest angle is really, really crazy. Farmlands are being lost per hectare on an annual basis. And these things are happening and not much is being done. I know something about the Great Green Wall that's supposed to cover the sub-Saharan countries, you know, connect countries that are supposed to plant trees and things like that. Nigeria was supposed to invest heavily on this. But I really do not know where that project is right now and what they are doing about it. So I'd like to now connect this to conflict sensitivity. If we talk about conflict sensitivity just in a nutshell tells you how to, you know, get involved as an actor in the issue of conflict in any region or state or area where you're working, because sometimes our interaction with the conflict can actually exacerbate it instead of, you know, reducing it per se. So when we talk about disaster risk reduction and marrying it with conflict sensitivity, it is important to know where to draw the line as to how we intervene. Because again, sometimes there is this apathy and then there's this rejection with people when they are a bit suspicious about your involvement in issues of conflict. Because, for example, a layman would want to ask, why is the European Union investing in disaster risk reduction in Africa? Does it mean there is no disaster in EU? Or why is the EU not leading on this process? So there is a way we can sell this message and actually get involved as actors, whether as investors, as private sector, as NGOs, as educators, you know, as media. There are angles where we need to come in and we need to be sensitive as to how we are coming in so that the message is taken in, you know, with positivity and not with that pinch of salt that makes people feel suspicious and things like that. There's a lot to say on this, but I'd like to stop here on this question.
The African Passport on Channel Africa, inspired by Agenda 2063, comes to you every Thursday from 5 past 8 to 9 o'clock a.m. Central African Time, and repeat shows every Sunday at 9 o'clock a.m. Join us as we design the Africa we want with me, your host, Godfrey, Mr. G. Maranire, here on Channel Africa, the African perspective.
Emmanuel Shah, I know I mentioned conflict sensitivity. And yes. Since I'm talking to you, you are from Nigeria. According to Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project, reporting on religious attacks, they say there were 23 attacks this year alone on religious groupings, 31 in 2021 and 18 in 2020. So we've seen a sharp increase with the recent attacks where dozens of people died in a Catholic church in southwestern Nigeria.
Yes.
How can we resolve such conflicts?
Thank you very much. Very important question. I would like to also add that the organization I work for, Mercy Corps, recently did a study that was also funded by the US AID called Religious Freedom in Nigeria. And that study was to, you know, deepen the findings on these numbers you're talking about as to why people are being attacked, you know, in places of religious gatherings. And this study led to, the research led to us, you know, rolling out a new program on religious freedom, working with a local partner in Nigeria from Plateau State. Now, what this program is all about, and I'm using it as a case study, as particularly in answering this question, is that before now, people had not seen the need to preach tolerance so much. Of course, it's happening. But, you know, Nigeria is a very diverse country, especially as it has to do with religion. It's a very diverse country. And there is a sharp divide between the Christians and the Muslims. And by the last election, census that we had, the population of Christians and Muslims is about, you know, 50-50 in Nigeria. And so if you have that strong number, you know, on both sides, then it therefore means that we have to find a way to coexist, because there is no settlement you will go to where you would not find this mix of both Christians and Muslims as the dominant religions in Nigeria. So this program in Mercy Corps is designed to bring religious leaders together and the adherents of this faith to actually come together to discuss, to have a conversation, to dialogue, to see the need to accept each other, because you cannot do without living with a Muslim if you're a Christian, or as a Christian, as a Muslim living with a Christian, you can't. It's a very, you know, multifaceted thing that we have in Nigeria. So this project we're doing in Mexico is supposed to be for a year in Kaduna, Kano and Katsina state particularly. These are states that are dominantly Muslim states. And most of these attacks you're talking about have been in these states that I have just mentioned. So again, the issue of religious tolerance is something that we can never overemphasize. And this preaching needs to now go beyond the church and the mosque. And they have to be taught in schools also. So I'd like to stop here to say that, again, the emphasis on this can, on religious tolerance, cannot be overemphasized and should be taught everywhere, from our homes to our schools to our mosques and to our churches. Thank you.
So to a certain extent, do you actually agree with Professor Vijay Kumar, who said we need to promote peace from our education systems right in the classroom?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't agree less.
The African Passport with Mr. G.
For those who are just joining us here on the African Passport today, I am in conversation with Professor Vijay Kumar, who is an associate professor in education in India, Emmanuel Shah, who is a master's degree holder in disaster risk management. I also have Mushtaq Al-Haq Ahmad Sikanda, who is a candidate doctoral student in India. Let me move on to Mushtaq.
Yes.
As a doctoral candidate at the University of Haifa, what academic papers do you normally present at conferences?
Thank you for inviting me to this program. I am a doctoral candidate at University of Haifa, Israel. I am come from Srinagar, Kashmir, that is a conflict zone. I have lived most of my life here. In conferences, I have been writing and presenting papers on different themes, whether related to religion, to conflict, gender, and also revivalist movements that are religious revivalist movements. So on these kinds of themes, I have been presenting papers all over the world, in India, as well as in other places.
Mm, thank you very much. You are an activist. Why did you choose a life of activism?
Activism is very essential because only getting a doctorate or just presenting papers or reading books doesn't help. Because activism helps us to practice the ideas to basically, it comes as a natural choice. Once you start reading and you try to bring some kind of a change on ground or at grassroots levels. So for that reason, it becomes very essential because only writing books, reading books, writing articles doesn't help to change things on ground at grassroots level. So that's why activism becomes very much essential. I think every academic or whosoever person is involved in producing knowledge or articulating a certain viewpoint, he or she needs to be do some kind of activism. So for my kind of activism, it directly is an outcome of the academics in which I am involved. So activism there becomes a natural choice. And also once you grow up in a conflict zone where violence is a daily kind of a lived reality, so activism becomes very much essential, whether it's related to education, whether it's related to conflict resolution, whether it's related to relationships between different communities. So that comes quite naturally with academics.
Mushtaq, how can Africans promote tolerance among people of different religions? I'm sure we can benefit so much from you since you are based in a very diverse society.
Yes, India has a long history of pluralism, tolerance, and coexistence among different religions and communities, because India is the birthplace of Hinduism, Sikhism, Buddhism, Jainism. So these are very old and new religions and non-Semitic religions. So Africa certainly can learn that through constant interaction with each other, with diverse communities and the lived realities, they certainly can develop a kind of a tolerant and pluralistic society, as well as helping to minimize the stereotypes. Because what we witness that in most of the communities, when they exist with each other, there is a problem of the othering. So we develop a certain kind of a stereotypical image of the other. It can be a religious other, it can be a political other, it can be maybe from a different caste. Because again, caste is a very important factor besides religion and other regional kind of identities. So they are certainly trying to minimize these stereotypes by cooperating with each other, by coexisting with each other, helping each other, and as well as promoting activities like sports, because sports are something that help us overcome these kinds of stereotypes, help us interact with each other. Also in festivals, whether they be Hindu, Muslim, or other kind of festivals, if we celebrate them together, as well as interact with each other during those festivals, as well as promoting joint kind of a classrooms. Because again, classrooms are very essential to promote a kind of a pluralistic and tolerant society, because students are like clean slates. So if they interact quite positively in the classrooms, then certainly we can have a very cooperative, united, pluralistic society that's quite tolerant. And the stereotypes against each other are also minimized through education, sports, as well as festivals. So I think in Africa also, these kinds of experiments can be put into practice, where the sports can help, where the joint classrooms can help, as well as festivals of different communities that are celebrated. They can certainly be an initiation point where the stereotypes against each other, the enmity against each other, or the worldview against each other can be changed through lived realities as well as through constant kind of a cooperation and constant kind of a interaction with each other.
Stay in touch. Send us your comments on Facebook, Channel Africa, and also on Twitter at Channel Africa One or at The African Pass. The African Passport with Mr. G.
Thank you very much, Mushtaq Al-Haq Ahmad Skanda from India. I'll get back to you. I still need to ask you a few more questions. For those who are just joining us today on the African Passport, today I am in conversation with Professor Vijay Kumar from India, Emmanuel Shal from Nigeria, and Mushtaq Al-Haq Ahmad Skanda from India. Professor Vijay Kumar, you will be taking part in the upcoming international course on peace and transformation peace building organized by Investors Muhammadiyah Yogyakarta, Indonesia. What do you expect out of the program?
Mr. Godfrey, as you can see, that we are living in the 21st century. And 21st century, particularly after this pandemic, we are facing lots of challenges. So in my opinion, those challenges are also posing issues related to our culture, our existence, and this is causing challenge to the peace also, peace in the whole world, not only in some country, but in the whole world. So I think through this conference, through this event, we would be able to understand the approaches of different culture, different countries, how we can cope up with the peace, how we can ensure that peace is there in our lives, in the lives of an individual, in the lives of a society, of a community, and in the life of a country or and the whole world. So because it is our thought, it is part of our culture, heritage, that the whole world is a small family. We call it Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam. So the science shows it that we all belong to the same family. We might be known with different names, different religion we may follow. And here in India, which is peculiar to our South Asian countries, casteism is also a very important factor. So we face challenges, all kinds of challenges because of these regions. So I think in this event, we would be able to discuss and debate also what we should do, what we need to do to ensure peace and harmony and ensure coexistence with one another. So this becomes important. This becomes important that we need to accept differences. We need to accept differences. So if we can accept differences, nobody can challenges. We will proceed, we will succeed, we will grow and develop as a world. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Vijay Kumar. I'll come back for your parting shot. Emmanuel Charles, what kind of Africa would you like to see?
Oh, great question. Thank you very much. Of course, it's I'd like to see an Africa that is truly Pan-African, an Africa that stands for its own idea, an Africa that believes in itself, an Africa that is hope to the citizens of every country of Africa, an Africa that is truly united. And this is not a dream. This is a reality that can be achieved if Africa truly gives its best to developing itself. Enough of the brain drain that we are suffering, enough of the haphazard approach to education, enough of the killings, enough of the hunger. Africa is truly sufficient. Africa is a very blessed continent. And so I want to see an Africa that is truly interested in investing in the progress and development of its people. An Africa that the world would reckon with. That is the Africa I dream of. And we all have a role to play in this. Not just, you know, being Africans, but making Africa a global destination, not just a place where people come to, you know, watch animals migrate or come to film documentaries of people suffering, but an Africa that will be an example to the world, an Africa that's actually open to everybody. That is the Africa I dream of. That's the Africa I see. And it is very possible if we all do what we are supposed to do. Enough of these killings, enough of these fightings, you know, enough of these differences. We are one and we should act as one. Thank you very much.
And why are you taking part in this upcoming international course on peace and transformation, peace building organized by investors, Muhammadiyah Yogyakarta, Indonesia, next month in July?
Thank you. Again, this is a very beautiful question. The reason why I was interested in applying for this is the simple word I saw in the advert, transformation. Now, transformation for me, when it comes to conflict, is something very important because conflict most times do not stop. They transform. They change from one form to another. So for you to tackle conflict is for you to understand how this conflict is transforming, how it is evolving. And there is no monopoly of knowledge in dealing with issues of conflict. And so I thought that being that this is an international course where people from around the world will be coming together to share learnings and to, you know, inspire themselves to do more as it has to do with peace building, I felt this was an opportunity for me to learn more because my work is focused on peace building. And then I cannot say I know too much. There is always room to learn. So I felt jumping on the bus of, you know, enlisting on this course will give me an opportunity to learn from other people what I can do in Nigeria, my country, to see an end to the multiple faceted conflict that we are currently experiencing in Nigeria. So yeah, that is it for me.
The African Passport on Channel Africa, inspired by Agenda 2063, comes to you every Thursday from 8:05 to 9:00 a.m. Central African Time, and repeat shows every Sunday at 9:00 a.m. Join us as we design the Africa world with me, your host, Godfrey, Mr. G. Madanire, here on Channel Africa, the African perspective.
Thank you very much, Emmanuel Shal. And Mushtaq Al-Haq Ahmad Sikandar, what do you expect to benefit from the upcoming course on peace and transformation, peace building by investors, Muhammadiyah Yogyakarta, Indonesia?
The course certainly helps and empowers us to understand the multifaceted and variegated kind of conflicts that are raging all over the world. And particularly, I come from a conflict zone. So for me, this course had an additional kind of attraction. And I intend to learn much more models of conflict resolution, peace building, and certainly interaction with the other people. So these are my expectations from the course. As stated earlier, that there is always room for learning more and more things about conflict resolution, peace building. So certainly this course has the potential to make us understand the variegated contours of the conflict that we witness raging in our societies as well as all over the world. And also the resource persons are quite good when it comes to delivering their lectures and also lived kind of experiences in conflict resolution. So these are the attractions that made me to apply for the course, and I am quite lucky enough to get selected for the same.
According to the South African calendar, the month of June is known as the Youth Month. And today, the 16th of June, is Youth Day. Professor Vijay Kumar, what is your message for the South African youth today on Youth Day?
It is an important day. Youth Day is an important day. And why it is an important day? Because on this day, we should recall the contribution which the youth of the country has done so far. So, because youth is an age which is full of energy, so if we can channelize that energy in the proper channel, like youths at various places, they indulge in drugs and other issues which is not good. So if they can positively channelize their energy in the right direction, then certainly we will be able to achieve the goals of our country, our society, South African country, particularly in this case. So this becomes important. This becomes an important day to recall and rededicate us, the youth of the country, to achieve our goals. Yeah, my best wishes to the youths of South Africa on this day. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Vijay Kumar. Emmanuel Shaw, today in South Africa, it is Youth Day. What is your message to the youth?
Thank you very much. I'm really excited because myself, I am a youth too. And not a charade to say that this is a very challenging time for youths across the African continent. So my message to the South African youth is that I encourage them to be resilient. I encourage them to look inwards, to believe in themselves. I encourage them to do their best for the communities where they have found themselves. I encourage them to take life one step at a time and know that there is a better tomorrow. Like our father of Africa, I'll call him Madiba, Mandela, the kind of fight that he fought with his youth to see a free South Africa. They should keep up that dream. They should push that dream and ensure that they are living in peace in their communities.
Godfrey, Mr. G, on Channel Africa, the African perspective. Thank you very much, Emmanuel Shaw. And Mushtaq, what is your message today on Youth Day?
I will just state that youth certainly have the potential to change any society. So my message would be that you should start reading about different cultures, try to interact with the different communities and youth who don't belong to your same caste, color, religion, community or society. So once this interaction happens, so many things will bog down the negative stereotypes. They will go down. So certainly read about other people, other cultures, as well as try to interact as much possible with others, because only then we can overcome stereotypes, we can overcome othering. And that would be my message for the youth today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'm sure you will also be interacting with different cultures in the upcoming course that you'll be attending, organized by Universitas Muhammadiyah Yogyakarta of Indonesia.
Stay in touch. Send us your comments on Facebook, Channel Africa, and also on Twitter at Channel Africa 1 or at The African Pass. The African Passport with Mr. G.
We are currently witnessing bloodshed and total destruction in several parts of the world with the major crisis between Russia and Ukraine. The need for peace building can never be emphasized. We need to invest more on conflict resolution programs. Our societies cannot transform in the absence of tolerance and a spirit of coexistence. I'm eternally grateful for the great insights from our guest today. It is such individuals who make this world a better place. Africa will keep on investing in partnerships such as these as we march towards the vision and aspirations of Agenda 2063. Thank you, Professor Vijay Kumar from India, Emmanuel Shaw from Nigeria, and Mushtaq Al-Haq Ahmad Sikandar from India. I wish you well during your international course on peace and transformation, peace building. Thank you.
Thank you so much for inviting
us. Thank you very much.